Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Today is January the 13th. We are in Parshas Beshalach on page 386. Right at the top of the page.
There we go.
Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. Tonight I want to read with you actually quite a lot of material. I want to read 2 pages with you so we can get a sense of what happens with the Mun. We've had a prelude to it. Moshe talking about it, Hashem talking about it, Moshe and I were talking about it. We discussed all that last week. Now it's actually going to come down, and I want to go through exactly what actually happens. So we're going to cover the next 2 pages all the way to the next chapter, and then we'll go and we'll point out the various issues that we need to talk about. We will almost certainly not cover everything this week. We'll have to come back to it next week. The prelude we've had so far is that it's going to fall, that the Jews needed food, that they complained, that Hashem says that the purpose of the man is to test the Jewish people, and it's particularly related to Shabbos, to see whether the Jews will treat Shabbos properly, not to collect the man on Shabbos. As we will see, that's going to be a major issue. And Hashem, we already pointed out that all the way back in the beginning of creation, that Hashem was Mekadesh and Mevarech Shabbos. He sanctified and blessed Shabbos, which means he sanctified it that the man does not fall, and he blessed it that the man falls double on Friday because an extra portion falls for Shabbos. So we already have all of that, but it hasn't actually happened, and now it's all going to happen. Before we begin, you should be aware that the man begins to fall on a Sunday. So even though the Mun has very important rules having to do with Shabbos, and this is a Jewish people who hasn't yet received the Torah, although we did receive the laws of Shabbos at Mara, right after Kriyas Yam Suf, right after the splitting of the sea. But the Mun, although it does revolve around Shabbos a great deal, and in fact is significant with Shabbos in that it changes the way it behaves, the way that the process of the man and what happens to the man changes with Shabbos, but that doesn't happen right away. And that's significant because the Jews, when we first get the man, we get it without Shabbos. And it's only when Shabbos comes that things change, and it's going to make a big impact on the Jewish people. The pasuk says, Vayihi v'erev, it was in the evening, Bata'al ha-salav, and the salav, which is a very meaty bird, came up, and it covered the camp, because the Jews had complained about meat and about bread. Mm-hmm. So Hashem gave them meat, and that's this very fatty bird that flew around the camp, and it was very easy to trap, and very easy to then slaughter and eat. Uvaboker, in the morning, there was a blanket of dew all around the camp. Now there's nothing unusual about that. Dew falls in the morning, and it was there in the morning. So the pasuk is contrasting that the slav came in the evening, which is not a very good time for food to become available. It's great for food to become available in the evening if it's fully prepared.
Yes.
So if you go to the restaurant and the food is ready, or you go to some sort of a function and they're serving dinner, that's terrific. But or if you come home and your spouse has prepared dinner for you, right? All that is terrific. But to get the raw material in the evening, especially when you don't have artificial light, although they did have the pillar of fire, but nevertheless, to begin preparing in the evening is not very good for food. By the time you get it all ready, especially if it's meat which needs to be slaughtered, and then the blood has to be drained, and then it has to be cooked, it's skinned, and then it's a big process. It was not a very great time for the meat to become available. And that was deliberate, because as we pointed out, the Jews, when we asked for meat, it was inappropriate. There was no reason to complain about meat. A person doesn't need meat to live. Plus, they didn't have animals they could have slaughtered. But bread, they did need bread. That was a legitimate complaint. And therefore, that's going to come down in the morning, which is the proper time for raw material to be available to make food out of. So in the morning, there was a blanket of dew all around the camp. Then, Vatal Shechvat HaTol, this blanket of dew then rose up, which is natural, and evaporated up into the sky. Vihine, behold, apnei amidbar, in the face of the wilderness, dak mechuspas. So they translate this as thin, exposed. Dak does mean thin, and mechuspas, Rashi says, is a very unusual word, but he translates it as exposed. Something thin and exposed. Dak kakifor al haaretz, thin as frost on the earth. Now here we are setting a precedent for the mun, and that is that none of us have ever seen mun. Neither did the Jews at the time. And therefore, when the Torah is describing mun to us, the only way to do it is to use various analogies, because none of us have any idea what it is. We've never seen it. We've never seen a picture of it. And the only way we can describe it is pick other things that we are familiar with and say that it's similar to that. Here we have some description. Later in the Chumash, there are other words used to describe the mun. So the first description we have of the mun is that it's thin and exposed, whatever that means. And how is it thin? It's thin as frost. So I don't know about you, when I think of frost, I think of a very, very thin item. Frost is not thick. If it were thicker, it wouldn't be frost. It would be ice.
Like a matzah.
Well, thinner than that. Frost is paper thin. Right, it's a very thin thing. So it was thin like frost on the ground. So that's the only description we get right now. We don't get this description of the color. We don't get a description of the texture. All we got a description of is the size, or the not just the size, but the thickness, the geometrical shape. I mean, it's thin, like frost. Vayiruven Yisrael, and the Jews saw it. Vayomru ish elchiv, and each man said to his brother, which means each person said to each other, man hu, it is man. Man means food. That's what mun means. Food, mun means that which sustains. That's all it means. Mun is not a fancy word. Mun is a very general word, which the Jews said, it's mun. Why do they say it's mun? Ki lo yadu mahu, for they didn't know what it was. So they knew it was food because Moshe told them there was going to be food. But they had no idea what this food was. So they said, it's mun. When Moshe told them that Hashem is going to provide for you, so who knows what they imagined? Perhaps they imagined loaves of bread. Mm-hmm. Perhaps they imagined loaves of matzah. Perhaps they imagined, I don't know, apples. I don't know what they would have imagined. But what they saw is not what they imagined. It's nothing, it didn't look like anything that they had experienced before, because they hadn't. So they said, it's mun, it's food, for they didn't know what it was. Vayomer Moshe alayhem, and Moshe said to them, Hu halechem, this is the bread that Hashem has given to you to eat. So Moshe here clarifies for them. You're saying it's food, you're correct, but it's not just food. What is it? It's bread. It's bread that Hashem has provided for you. So what is the difference between calling something food? It doesn't even say ochel. It says mun. Mun means that which sustains. What's the difference in calling something food and calling something bread?
Bread defines the food, the kind of food that it is.
Well, that's true, but you and I have an idea of what bread is. But this wasn't bread. This is being called bread. So Moshe says, this is the bread. So evidently, bread doesn't have to be this loaf-like thing with a crust on the outside and a fluffy part on the inside. It doesn't have to be that. It can also be this. So what is bread?
Something that sustains you.
Okay, something that sustains you.
When I think of bread, one would think of the toil that one had to have the bread. You have to plant the grain, wait for the grain to grow, and to
so then this shouldn't fit.
No, it doesn't. But I think it's saying this is the food. It shouldn't be called lechem. I guess he was trying to give them some kind of frame of reference. But you can see it's a heavenly gift from a Kaddish.
That's true. That's true. But in what way is this bread?
It's prepared by Hashem. It's
so why didn't he say this is? Why didn't he say this is puff pastry?
well, when we eat bread, then we bench afterwards.
Correct.
That's a special category.
Now, why is that? Why do we bench on bread?
Because Hashem provided for it for us. Doesn't it
came from the earth.
In the Torah, from the earth.
Well, that's true for all, many foods. Come from the earth. Why do we?
Yeah, this is stuff that a person has to prepare.
Well, you have to prepare meat also. You can't do cake also. I mean,
it had to be. Correct me if I'm wrong. More than just what we would call bread.
Right.
Yeah, it had to have something more nourishing in it. So it perhaps was a combination of things that seemed like bread.
Well, bread is nourishing.
No, but bread you could live off of bread. But not for years. That's just not.
Depends what kind of. But yes, you can. It depends what kind of bread it is. Pure white bread that we have in America. You're right. You can't live on that for years.
Right.
But real bread. What bread is supposed to be?
From the north.
Right.
So when
right.
I think if you just ate bread.
You can live on bread and water.
For several years.
If that's all you have.
Grains you can.
You may survive.
You survive. It's not the most balanced diet, but you'd survive. I mean, but
we don't know.
People lived on bread and water.
We don't know what it was, and it could perhaps be more than what we call bread.
Okay, but so right now I want to know in what way is it like bread? He's calling it bread. So Mrs. Blatch, what do you want to say? I heard you say something before. I heard you.
Well, it's the mainstay. It's the bottom line of the least amount that you can have with the most benefit.
Okay, so bread is the mainstay.
Mm-hmm.
Bread is the mainstay. That's why bread gets the special after blessings, the benching that we do. Because bread is the mainstay. Everything else is great, but bread is the mainstay. Yes?
And that's satiation comes into it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we bench on it because we've been satisfied. It implies something satisfying. I think bread feels a quality of satisfaction and satiation.
Mm-hmm. Is it certain? Okay, the satiation comes with bread. Yeah.
Isn't there also something about bread? I recall once reading that it requires man to do something to change the wheat into the form that we call bread that we eat.
That's true.
Man almost can't make bread, and bread doesn't grow, so man has to contribute somehow.
Okay.
We make a motzi because we're having bread. That covers everything that's at the meal.
That's because bread is the mainstay.
Right. So that's the importance.
Right. Right.
And I do think we tend to think of a loaf of white bread.
Yeah, that's what we tend to think of, but that doesn't have. I mean, that's a relatively new phenomenon to have that most bread be like that. That wasn't what it used to be.
But the man is a finished product; they didn't have to do anything with it.
No, it's true.
No toil on that.
That's true.
But unfortunately, if you're a diabetic, you die.
Yeah. Okay, so that's.
I knew that had a consequence.
I can't eat bread.
You need to eat a little bit of it.
No.
Not at all.
Very rare.
Don't eat the good bread.
Rare.
This
guy's
saying something.
Well, we say a blessing over bread. Because
yes.
It's something that we thank Hashem.
Yes, yes.
Now, this man came from Hashem.
Yes.
So it's equivalent to bread that we say Hashem.
Okay, that's a good analogy. Yeah.
Bread also has, or at least lechem, has a position as a sign of a brit, of a covenant, and of a suda. You know, I'm thinking about when Yaakov sits down with Lavan, you know, and they decide, okay, we're going to make this pact. And they have lechem there on the mountain. They're just having a meal, but it's called lechem. And so maybe there's a quality in here of this being a bris or a brit.
Okay.
A suda mitzvah.
Bread is considered to be the mainstay. The term breaking bread is a Torah term to break bread, and it means to have a meal. A meal is called bread. even if you're not having bread, or even if bread isn't the main thing you're having, it's called bread because bread is the main part of the meal. Up until recent times, bread played a very big role in meals. Today, because of the fact that we, Baruch Hashem, have great affluence, and we also have great access to all kinds of foods, both in the fruit and vegetable category and in the dairy and meat categories, we have all kinds of access that they didn't have previously. I mean, you were in Eastern Europe, you didn't see a pineapple. You know, never.
Right.
You never saw a pineapple in your life. So there's certain things that we have access to, and we have access to almost all year round. It's very unusual in history to have such access. Even fish, you didn't always have access to, depending on what season it was, in the middle of the winter, right? Depending where you were, it wasn't necessarily an accessible thing. The bread is something which was always accessible. And the reason why it was always accessible is because you have the harvesting, and then you put the wheat away, and then you use it all year round, and use it to make bread, wheat or barley, whatever it is you're making the bread out of. And it's considered to be the main part of the meal. That's why it gets the most important bracha of Hamotzi Lecha Min Ha'aretz. The one we thank Hashem for, the one who extracts the bread from the ground. It's a very specific blessing. We actually mentioned the word lechem in the blessing, as opposed to if you want to eat an apple, you say borei pri ha'etz. You say the one who creates the fruit of the tree. You don't say borei tapuach, the one who creates an apple. You don't mention the word apple in the blessing. You just mention the fruit of the tree, which is more general. But when you're talking about bread, you actually say the name of the bread in the blessing itself. Hamotzi lecha min ha'aretz. And, as was mentioned, if you have bread at your meal, then everything else is subsumed under the bread. Now, it used to be that the way they ate was all around the bread. My grandfather, Olav Shalom, who was born in the 1920s, so the way he never ate a real meal, without bread. I mean, sometimes he'd snack. But if he was eating a meal, there always had to be bread. I grew up, like I think most people of my generation, where meals don't have to have bread. You know, you sit down, it depends on what's being served. Sometimes meals have bread, sometimes they don't. But when my grandfather, Olshan, would come for a meal to my parents' house, my mother would always put out bread for him.
Which country?
And pepper.
Which country?
He was born in Philadelphia.
Okay. With a good bread. I just want to have
fun. He always had bread at any real meal. It was always with bread. My Rosh Hashiva of Weinberg's Haracha in Baltimore, Rabbi Feldman's father-in-law, when he would eat a meal, I'm talking about a weekday meal. Shabbos, everybody has to have breakfast of the Shabbos meal. But I'm talking about a weekday meal. We once had a program. I was once on a summer seed program in Richmond, Virginia. And after the program was over, we came back for a reunion, Hanukkah time. And Rabbi Weinberg came down to give a talk. So we ate dinner together at our host's home, and he came in and was eating dinner there as well. And we sat down, and the hostess served, I believe it was chicken and rice and, some sort of vegetable. You know, a nice balanced meal. To me, that was a normal meal. We sat down, and the first thing Rabbi Weinberg did was he said, "Do you have any bread?" So she defrosted some bread for him. And then the way he ate, I always describe this to the men when I'm teaching them about brachos, about eating. The way he ate was he held the bread in one hand and he held the fork in the other hand, and he would take a bite of the food, take a bite of the bread, bite of the food, bite of the bread. Everything was with the bread. Right? So you're familiar with that, right? That's the way that people would eat. It's only in recent times that we don't eat that way because we have such a proliferation of other types of foods. And you can even sit down to a meal and have all kinds of starches without any bread. But that's a new phenomenon. That wasn't the way it used to be. So bread is the mainstay. It's the main part of food, of eating. And Moshe says to the people, this isn't just food, this is the bread. This is the main food. Now, it doesn't look like bread. It doesn't have any resemblance to bread at all. I mean, it's this thin thing that's on the ground. But it's bread. It's bread in the sense that it is the sustainer. It's the main thing you're going to be eating. What was the bracha on man? The bracha on bread is... What's that? Yeah. The bracha on bread is hamotzi lechem min ha'aretz. The one who extracts bread from the ground. The bracha on man was hamotzi lechem, one who extracts bread, min ha'shamayim, from the heavens. Because it's bread. It is also bread. Even though it doesn't have a crust, doesn't have the right... It's bread. Because it's the sustainer. It's the main thing. So the one who brings the bread from the heavens, who brings out the bread from the heavens, that was what man, that was the bracha on man.
So that's
what Moshe tells them. This is lechem, this is the bread that Hashem has given to you to eat. Pasuk says Zion verse 16. Zeh davar asher tziva Hashem, this is the thing that Hashem commanded. Liktu mimenu ish lefi achlal. Everyone should collect from it, each man according to the amount that he eats. Now, one might have thought that that meant that if you have a big appetite, you collect a lot, and if you have a small appetite, you collect a little. But that's not what it means. It means each person should collect the amount that each person should normally eat. How much is that? Omer lagul goles. And omer, and omer is a certain volume. Lagul goles per head. And omer per head. Mispar nafshos teichem, the amount of your souls. Each man, for those in his tent, he should take. So if a person had a family of six, he would collect six omers. If he had a family of seven, he would collect seven omers. A family of three, he collects three omers. Depending on how many people in his family, the head of household would go out and collect that many omers of mun.
And it didn't matter, children, adults?
Didn't matter. Which means, evidently, that this had nothing to do with appetite. It was this Omer, which the volume, which we'll talk about how much that is presently, but this Omer is the amount for every person. Yeah. Now, we don't know anything at this point about the mun. We don't know what it looks like. We don't know what color it is. We don't know what texture it is. We only know one thing. That is?
It's thin.
So if you're going to collect a lot of this stuff, to get to an omer, whatever an omer is, seems like you've got to cover a lot of ground to get. I mean, if this is spread out on the ground in a thin layer, it would seem that somehow you've got to. I don't know if it was brittle. I don't know if it peeled. Like, what did it? What was it? Was it like a fruit roll up? Like, what did it? What was it like when you took it off the ground? At this point, we don't know. We don't know anything about it. So, in what way did this thing become an omer? An omer is going to be a volume. Think of a loaf of bread. So somehow you have to get an omer's worth.
How will they know? They didn't have scales.
Okay, they don't have to know. As we'll see in a moment, they don't have to know exactly.
Okay.
It'll calibrate itself.
Okay.
But still, we're talking about, at least at this point, it seems like somewhat of a tedious process to gather the stuff.
But Rabbi, where is the indication that it was thin?
It says it was duck. It was thin.
It says
it was duck. Says thin.
Says thin as frost on the earth.
Thin as frost.
Thin as frost.
Thin as frost. Now, in theory, one could have said that perhaps it fell in layers. Maybe there were several layers of mun piled on top of each other when it fell. Right? Perhaps that was what it was. But that's hard to say.
What's it that? Wouldn't be thin anymore.
Well, maybe there were several thin layers. Thin. You know, it was like
a
seven-layer cake.
It wouldn't look thin anymore.
Okay, but, so the way the Torah describes it doesn't seem that way, because it seems that there was dew on top of the mun, and then the dew rose, and then they saw the mun. It seems that they didn't even see the mun under the dew. Now, why would they not see the mun under the dew? Isn't dew transparent?
Yeah.
How would they not see the mun? It seems like the... What?
I mean, it was transparent.
The mun is transparent.
Okay, so perhaps the mun is transparent. We don't know. We don't know what color the mun was. But when the dew rose, now they saw the mun. So somehow, the mun wasn't visible, or at least not readily visible, when the dew was still on the ground. So it seems that not only is the mun thin, but it's hard to see. Maybe it's translucent. In some way, this mun is not easy to see. Now, you don't really see dew on the grass. I mean, you could if you look closely. But what you see is a shimmer. Like you look outside in the early morning, and you see a shimmer across a lawn. Right? That's how you know that there's dew. If you look very closely, you'll see drops. But you know, just taking a general look, you see a shimmer on the ground. So then you expect that when the dew rises into the air, that shimmer is gone. The Jews, the dew evaporated, and evidently the look of dew was still there. So it seems that this mun wasn't easy to see. I mean, I don't mean you couldn't see it, but it wasn't like a dark brown. It wasn't a color that leaped out at you against the ground. Now, what did the ground look like where they were? They were in the desert. They were in the desert. So now not all desert is sand dunes and like that, but they weren't in a place. They weren't in a place of vegetation. It was the Sinai Desert. So the mun against the desert was not easy to see. It wasn't easy to see. So that's important, and we'll see as we move along what the mun actually might have looked like if we will try to piece it together as we move along. But it all we know right now is that it was thin and not easy to see, and that they had to collect an omer of it. So now, Pasuk Yud-Zayin, verse 17. Vayasu chen b'nei Yisrael. The Jews did this, which means they followed instructions. They collected an omer per soul, per person, in their tent. Vayu kitu hamarbe v'hamamit. And they collected, those who collected a lot, and those who collected a little. So, how is this? Why is this pasuk not contradictory? First it says, they did as they were told, which means they collected an omer per person. And then it says, they collected, those who collected a lot, and those who collected a little. I thought you were only supposed to collect an omer.
A big families and little families.
Okay, so the simple meaning is, they're big families and little families. They did exactly what they were told. They collected an omer per person. So the family that had eight people in the household collected eight omers. That's a large collection. And those only two people in the household only collected two omers. That's one way to understand it. Another way to understand it is, as was mentioned, they didn't have scales. They didn't walk around with some sort of a scale. They had to estimate. They collected what they thought was an omer per person. They did what they were told. But they couldn't get it exactly right, so they collected it. Some people had a little bit too much, some people had a little bit too little. But then, they got home, via modu va'omer. They measured against the omer. Meaning they had a measure, called an omer, and they measured it. V'lo hadif hamarbeh, and the one who took a lot did not take more than they were supposed to. V'hamamit, and the one who took a little bit, lo hechsir, didn't lack from the omer per person. Ish tefiyachlo lo katu. Each person collected according to the right amount. So this was a miraculous thing that happened with the mun, that the people collected the correct amount, even though they didn't have scales with them. They did when they got back home. But when they were, it wouldn't be a scale, it wasn't a weight, it was a volume. But they didn't walk around with a bowl and measure every time they collected. They just collected. So even though they were estimating as they went along, when they got home, it was correct. They had collected the correct amount. Either they actually did collect the correct amount, or it corrected itself by the time they got home. That Hashem made it correct itself. So they all got an omer per person. So that was the first mitzvah of the mun. The first mitzvah of the mun was collect an omer per person, and everybody listened. So far, so good. The Jews did as they were supposed to do. Mitzvah number one of the mun, everybody passed. Flying colors. Number two. Vayomer Moshe Aleh, Moshe said to them, Ish al yosir mimenu ad boker. A man should not leave it over till morning. No one should leave the mun over till morning. You eat it the day that you collect it. And don't leave anything over. And we spoke about this already, that part of the test of the mun was to see about your person's trust in God. So, when by the time the day is over, there's nothing left. No pantry, no refrigerator, no freezer. There's nothing left. You finish it, you're done. And you just have to believe that it's going to fall again tomorrow. So
are they allowed to eat it during the night too?
I don't know about midnight snacks. I don't know. I don't know about that. I'm not sure.
They could eat the birds.
It says here until morning.
Yeah,
so,
the next morning.
Right. So in the implication is that at night they could still eat it.
Right.
So, okay. But then it says, V'lo Shamuel Moshe. And they didn't listen to Moshe. So mitzvah number two of the mon, which was don't leave it over, they didn't listen. Vayosiru anashim menuat boker. And some men left over until morning. Our sages teach us which men left over until morning? Dasan and Aviram. They left over until morning. And what happened to the mon? Vayarum tolaim, and it became infested with worms. Vayiv ash, and it spoiled. How do they translate it here?
Stank.
It stank. Okay. So it turned rancid. Vayiktsof aleihem Moshe, and Moshe got upset with them. Became angry with them. Literally means he jumped on them. It doesn't mean, it's not physically jumping. He got upset with them. So they didn't listen.
But they had to experiment. I mean, you can't just take everything for granted.
Okay, hold that thought. That's a very good point. That's a very good point.
But we should trust.
Hashem said, or Moshe said, in the name of Hashem, don't leave it over. And they did. Okay, and it spoiled. But hold that thought, that's very important. Okay, fine. Vayukitu oso baboker baboker, they collected it each morning, ish kafi achlo, each person according to the amount that they eat, the chamashemesh, and then the sun would become hot, vinamas, and it would melt. Which means, as Chazal explained, that there was an abundance of mun on the ground. More than an omer per person. There were a couple of million Jews, and there were more than a couple of million omers of mun available. So the Jews collected, but when they finished collecting, and you were only allowed to collect an omer per person, there was still leftover mun on the ground. So you might have been tempted to go bring home more because there's more there. No, you couldn't collect it. You left it out there. The sun would get hot and it would melt. Now, Chazal say that our sages teach us that what happened to the melted mud? So it would become a liquid form, and it would seep into various water sources, whether it was a well or it was a river or a creek, or it would just seep into that. And then animals would drink it. They would lap it up. And then, let's say a deer would lap up some of the melted mun. Then some hunter, not a Jewish hunter, some other hunter, would hunt and kill the deer and then eat the meat of the deer. And the meat of the deer would taste better than regular deer meat. And as Rashi explains, in the name of our sages, in this way, the nations of the world that were around where the Jews were got a sense for the special food the Jews were eating. They couldn't eat mun themselves. Mun was a special food for Jews. But they got a whiff of it. They got a sense of it by having the animals, that had partaken of the melted mud. Yeah.
So when it says that they left it overnight until the morning, so if they only took according to how much they needed, they must not have eaten at all.
That's right.
So if I took an omer for myself, I didn't eat the whole omer.
That's right. So they went hungry a little bit.
Well, there might have been enough for me.
Well, okay, so, I mean, it, evidently, that they Hashem wanted them to eat an omer, mm-hmm. right? And they didn't, and left it over. So the mun, right, so they ended up eating less than they were supposed to eat, and left it over, right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Couple of questions. How did they know to make that prayer, Hamosi Lechem Min Hamayim?
Hashamayim. Moshe told them.
Yeah. So from now on, this food, you're going to make this lesson.
Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing is, if the mom was on the floor, is that a little, like...
dirty.
Not dirty, kind of degrading. You know, I mean, you can pick vegetables from the floor, but it just seems like...
Yeah, and they didn't wash it off.
But you had dew on both sides.
Okay. So here the Torah only says there was dew on top. Later on in the Chumash it says that the dew fell first, and then the man fell on top of the dew. So the man was actually packaged.
Protected.
The dew fell first, then the man, then the dew. However, that needs to be understood a little bit. And by the way, what mitzvah do we have because of that?
Cover the challah.
Okay. So one of the reasons why we cover the challah on Shabbos when we make Kiddush, one of the reasons we do this, the main reason we do it, the main reason we cover the bread, is because normally the bracha on bread should precede the bracha on wine. So usually hamotzi should precede hagafen. So that, let's say, at a meal where you're not making kiddush, but you're having wine. For most people, some people have wine at a regular meal without, you know, a regular weekday meal. But let's say at a Purim meal, a Purim su'uda, everybody has to have a Purim suud. On Purim, you're supposed to have a meal, and the meal ought to have bread, and most people will have some wine at their Purim suuda. So in that case, one would first make a hamotzi on the bread, and afterwards make a bori pri hagafen on the wine. Because although it's true that bread covers all other foods, it doesn't cover wine. You do need to make a separate bracha on wine. So normally, the bracha on bread precedes the bracha on wine. When we make kiddush on Shabbos, we reverse the order, and we make the bracha on the wine first. So because we're doing that, we cover the bread. That's one of the reasons we cover the bread. But another reason we cover the bread, and that reason, that first reason, would only require a covering on top of the bread. But because of this, because the bread reflects the man, because man is bread, and we'll see references to bread here as well for Shabbos. So because of that, we encase the bread. So we have a covering on bottom, which would be your cutting board or your tray, whatever it is you're putting the bread on, and then a covering on top of the bread. And that is to reflect the way the man came, which is dew on the bottom, dew on top, and man packaged in the middle. So we are reenacting the man with our Shabbos challah, our Shabbos bread. But even that still needs to be explained because dew is not a solid surface. So what does that mean that the mun was encased, that the dew came down, and then the mun, but what did the dew on the bottom, what did the dew on the bottom do? What did it do? How did it protect, really, addressing Dr. Clary's point, which is, what did it do on the bottom?
That's the equivalent of putting it between two pieces of paper. So the dirt, other items couldn't get to it to make it fresh.
Okay. So evidently, the bottom dew did coat the surface of whatever the mun fell on. So let's say it was dirt, that it fell on the dirt or fell on the sand.
Yeah.
And it prevented that dirt or sand from getting on the mun, that the mun remained clean because it was on top of the dew. So even if the dew is so thin, nevertheless, it was enough to protect the mun. Now, if that's true, we've learned another property of the mun. The mun, evidently, isn't that heavy. Because if it's heavy, then even if you put a thin layer of dew under the mun, and the mun comes down and presses down, then that thin layer of dew isn't going to protect it from anything. Somehow, the mun must be pretty light, because it's resting like almost like feather, almost like a feather on the dew, and the dew is keeping it from becoming soiled. So we've got here a very thin item, which is possibly translucent, which is also very light. This analogy to frost is becoming actually pretty good. It seems not to be that, not to have that much substance to it. And yet, you had to collect an omer of this. Now, it didn't have to be very heavy. Let's say you had, Kinahara, you had 12 people in your household. So you had to collect 12 omers. So you're lugging 12 omers. It must not have been that heavy. So you may be able to carry a lot of omers of mun, and it's okay. Yeah.
The dew is also wet and doesn't affect.
That doesn't affect it. Right. You mean like if we're a cracker and it will fall on the dew, the dew will make it soggy. Right, make it soggy. So evidently it doesn't make it soggy. It's okay. Again, the analogy to frost is a pretty good one.
Right.
Right? Okay.
Rabbi, I'm sorry.
Okay, again.
Yeah. You are in the desert, and if even it's thin, it could be miles.
Right.
All over the
all
world. Yeah, and it you know, it took them time to gather it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's thin, it could be over a mile. What? 2 million people.
Let's make another observation. The mun, it says before, was thin on the
wilderness.
Yeah, on the wilderness. And it says on the end of Pasuk Yudal in the 14, on the
earth.
What about on the tents? Didn't the dew fall on the tent?
Yes.
So did the mun.
Did, but the mun didn't.
Okay. So the mun did not fall on the tents. The mun fell on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't fall on your tent. It fell on the ground. So there was some pattern over here. The mun would fall, the dew would fall, the mun would fall, the dew on top of that. Did dew fall, and I don't know anything about dew. I don't know anything about scientifically, meteorologically, I have no idea. Just I imagine that really there's only one layer of dew. I don't know how much dew, you know, I really have no idea how it works.
It falls in everything.
I know it falls in everything, but are there two layers? Are there two?
Not normally.
Are there two fallings of dew?
No.
I imagine not.
No.
So evidently, you had the regular dew all over the place. Then the mun would come down in very specific places, and a second layer of dew would fall after the mun.
Down to Hashem and being humble.
That could be. That could be.
Because we were dependent on Him.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's interesting. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Pasuk Chaf Beis 22. Vayhi bayom hashishi, it was on the sixth day. Laktu lechem mishneh, they collected a double portion. Shnei ha'omer la'echad, two omers per person. Now, the way that many of the commentaries explain this is, they collected lechem mishneh, rather than meaning double, it should be read lechem like mishuna, different. It was actually even better than regular money. It tasted better. Two omers per person. Vayavogu kol nesiei ha'idah, and all the leaders of the nation came. Vayagidu l'Moshe, and they told Moshe. So this was surprising. For 5 days, Sunday through Thursday, they collected the mun, and no matter how much you collected, and you came out to be an omer per person. But here they came home, and now they had two omers per person. Now what? Vayomer aleihem, and Moshe said to them, Hu asher diber Hashem. This is what Hashem had said. Moshe had never told them about what Hashem had told him. He hadn't yet told them about the difference with Shabbos. So this is what Hashem had said. Shabbason, Shabbos Kodesh, Hashem Mochar. That tomorrow, meaning tonight and tomorrow, is a special Shabbos, the holy Shabbos for Hashem. Eis asher tofu eifu, whatever you're going to bake, bake. Ve'eis asher tivashlu vashelu, whatever you're going to cook, cook. Ve'eis kol ha'odei, from whatever you have left over from your today's eating, hanichu lachem l'mishmeres ad haboker, leave it as a protection until morning. So prepare it however you want to prepare it. The mun, you could prepare it if you wanted to, although the Gemara says they didn't need to prepare it because the truth is that you could just will it to taste like something baked or taste like something cooked, or whatever it is you wanted it to taste like. You could just think about it, and it would taste like that. You didn't need to bake it or cook it. So they say that this pasuk means figuratively, but it's teaching us that, as we know, Misha tarach be'erev Shabbos yochal b'Shabbos, whoever troubles himself on Friday will eat on Shabbos, because we can't prepare food on Shabbos. So all preparations should be done on Friday, and then leave it over until the next morning for Shabbos. That you can do. Now the pasuk says in Chavdal 24, "Vayanichu oso ad haboker." They left it until morning. Kasha tziva Moshe, as Moshe had commanded, v'lo hivish, and it did not rot or stink. Did not spoil. V'rimalo haisavo, and there was no worm in it. It did not become infested. So even though initially had they left it over, it would have become wormy. Here it didn't. Vayomer Aleihem Moshe. Moshe said to them, Vayomer Moshe, Moshe said, Ichluhu Hayom. I want you to count how many times it says Hayom in this pasuk. Eat it today. Ki Shabbat Hayom LaHashem, for today is Shabbos. Hayom, today, Lo Sim Sa'u Vasadeh, you will not find it in the field. How many times does it say Hayom?
Three
times. And it is from here that we have a remez, a hint to three meals on Shabbos. Shalish Shudis. The third meal comes from here because it says the word Hayom three times in this pasuk. Eat it today. Today is Shabbos. Today you will not find it in the field. Shesh es yamim til kituhu. 6 days you shall collect it. Uvayom ha-shevi'in. On the seventh day, Shabbos. It is Shabbos. Lo yebo. It will not be there. So here we have the two special differences for the mun when it comes to Shabbos. Number one, you're going to get a double portion on Friday. And number two, it will not fall on Shabbos. And that Hashem blessed. He was vayivarech esyam ha-shvi'i. He blessed the seventh day, that the mun fell double on Friday. And vayikadesh also, he sanctified the seventh day in that it didn't fall on Shabbos. So Shabbos becomes this day where you just live off of yesterday. You don't do anything new on Shabbos. You live off of Friday. And Friday becomes a double day. So the here now we can go back to the point that was made earlier, which is that Moshe had told them, don't leave it over. And had everyone listened and not left it over, had everyone done that, then no one would have known the consequences for leaving it over. Because all they would have known is, you don't leave it over, and whatever was left in the field melts, and that's it. No one would know the consequences for leaving it over. Then, when Shabbos came, Moshe would say, leave it over. So they would all leave it over. No one would realize that if you leave it over during the week, it gets infested with worms and it stinks. But with Shabbos, it doesn't. So the question now is, doesn't it turn out that what Dathan and Aviram did in leaving it over actually was a positive thing, because now we can contrast. Now we know the consequences for leaving it over during the week, and now that you left it over on Shabbos, it didn't rot. Look at that. Whereas, had they not violated the rule during the week, no one would realize what exactly is so special about being able to leave it over on Shabbos. Maybe if you leave it over during the week, it also won't rot. It's just you're not allowed to leave it over. Perhaps if you leave it over on a Tuesday night, it doesn't rot. It's just that Hashem said, don't leave it over. But if you do leave it over, it's not going to rot. It's just that you're not allowed to leave it over. Just like Hashem says, don't eat pork. If a person eats pork, it's an aveira, but it's the regular metabolism through the body. Nothing changes. So here also, if Hashem says, don't leave it over. Okay, so I won't leave it over. If I do leave it over, I don't know, maybe everything will be fine. But I'm just going to listen to Hashem. Then comes Shabbos, I'll leave it over. Here, because it had been left over as a violation, and everybody found out that there's an immediate retribution, it gets spoiled immediately. So then, when it doesn't spoil on Shabbos, that's a special thing. So how are we to understand this? Why is that not actually a good thing that someone left over during the week? Okay. So this we're going to pick up with this next time, this discussion of
we don't not leave it over because it's going to rot. We do it because Hashem commanded.
Yes. There's no question about it. Right. And faith. Right, no, that's true. But Moshe never told them it's going to rot if you leave it over. He just said, don't leave it over.
It should have been enough.
What we have to explain is why it would have been better had they not left it over. And it would have been better had we never found out what happens if you leave
that
it over.
That would have shown the faith.
Yes. I just want to point out, though, that now we're up to the third mitzvah of the month. The first one was collect it, an omer per person. They did that. The second was don't leave it over. They didn't do that. Some violated. The third one is that that on Shabbos, you don't collect it. And on Shabbos, there's not going to be any mun. They're not supposed to go collecting. And we're going to find out that they violated that.
Okay.
They did. And we're going to discuss that about...
It fell on Shabbos?
What's that, what? Mm-hmm. It didn't fall.
It didn't fall.
But they went looking for it.
They went looking for it.
But they went looking for it.
Was it only done from not long ago? The month that came down for Shabbat was better than the regular month. So therefore, if it came down in the morning, on Friday morning, both the Friday month and the Shabbat month had to be the same.
Yes. So the Friday month seems to have also tasted better. Yes. It seems that way. Just want to make one last point before we break, in that one should be aware that this system that Hashem has embedded in the world, that Friday gets Shabbos's portion. It seems that at least conceptually, Friday has within it the ability for double production. Meaning that very often you'll hear, it's usually said as just an overwhelming expression, but there's no way I can get it all done. Right? There's so much to do before Shabbos, I just can't possibly get it all done. And somehow it gets done. It seems that Friday has the capacity to get more done, because it fell double on Friday. There seems to be a bracha that Friday gets Shabbos' portion. And it seems that includes productivity as well. So we're going to talk about that also in next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.